Today is Thursday, March 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more dramatic steps around the world as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to rage. China expels major U.S. media outlets at a time when experts say communication is critical. Also ahead, how animal sanctuaries are working to keep our closest living ancestors from contracting the coronavirus. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump is invoking the Defense Production Act, which would allow his administration to force American industry to manufacture medical supplies that are in short supply in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. White House correspondent Patsy Wittacoswara has more.
A shortage of protective equipment and medical supplies as the United States responds to the coronavirus pandemic. The country's Federal Emergency Management Agency has been activated at the highest level nationwide. On Wednesday, President Donald Trump took it a step further.
We'll be invoking the Defense Production Act just in case we need it.
The act provides presidential authority to expedite and expand the supply of resources from the country's industrial base to support national defense.
It will give priority to those kinds of materials that are needed to fight the virus. For example, masks are a concern. And if there's a mask manufacturer, the government can go to that manufacturer and say, you must give priority to production of these masks.
Trump also announced the deployment of two U.S. Navy ships, Comfort and Mercy. The ships are literally floating hospitals, often deployed for humanitarian assistance in natural disasters.
It has about 1,000 rooms on it. It has operating rooms. And the president is going to dispatch the Comfort to us. It will be in New York City Harbor. It's an extraordinary step. Obviously,
the USNS Comfort is undergoing maintenance and will deploy to New York in the coming weeks. The USNS Mercy will deploy somewhere on the West Coast in the coming days. Defense Secretary Mark Esper announced that U.S. military field hospitals are also being prepared for deployment and that his department will make available up to 5 million N95 respirator masks and other personal protective equipment for distribution.
The first 1 million masks will be made available immediately. Next, we are prepared to distribute to HHS up to 2,000 deployable ventilators for use as needed.
The administration plans to mobilize the Army Corps of Engineers to create new medical facilities in response to the outbreak, a plan that would need the support of the private sector.
Bringing the Army Corps of Engineers in might help increase the number of skilled contracting officers that were available and tap into assets in the civilian economy, but they don't bring any actual construction capabilities themselves.
Meanwhile, in the U.S. Capitol, metro stations are deserted as authorities urge residents to stay home as much as possible. Patsy Wittacoswara, VOA News at the White House.
Meanwhile, on Wall Street, stocks slumped again. The Dow lost more than 1,300 points, or more than 6%. Nearly all of the gains on Wall Street since Trump's inauguration have now been wiped out. The economic fallout from the crisis is mounting with word that the three big U.S. automakers are shutting down their factories across North America. Meanwhile, the situation in Europe is not any better. For that part of the story, we are joined by Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, you're in Paris. Let's start there.
On the one hand, here in France, we've had the first full day of lockdown, people getting used to the fact they're not going to be able to go in and out of their homes and to go shopping when they want. We've had at least 5,000 cases across the country of police having to issue instant fines to people who broke that curfew, who were out and about without the necessary paperwork. We've also had an increase in the last 24 hours of deaths. There's been 89 new deaths. That's brought the numbers up to 264 in all in France. And the new figure that we've just got from the French General Director of Health is that 9,134 people have tested positive for the virus. So it is getting worse. The health ministry is saying that numbers are going up. We're nowhere near it, the end of this. And as part of that, the French government has declared a health state of emergency. That means that Parliament can give the government the right to just have what it wants to try and bring an end to this crisis. That means whatever they need for the healthcare, whatever they need to get provisions to staff, to get provisions to the military to help out, that sort of thing. We've also seen the first airlift of patients from that critical area right in the east. The military have moved in and they're flying people out of that area for treatment in the south because the hospitals there are just completely saturated. They cannot treat any more people.
What about the rest of Europe? It's so interconnected. We know they're closing borders, but everybody seems to have this. So what is the latest?
Well, across Europe, we've now got that 30-day period about to come in where travelers from outside of the EU will not be able to come into the EU area. That has now been agreed, and eventually, over the next 24 hours, it will be a really locked tight, the European Union zone. Let's have a look. Germany is closing its borders, of course, in response to this virus. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel went on state television Wednesday night to appeal to the nation, said that this was the biggest threat the German nation had faced since World War II. And that is actually, this was a time when the country was really going to be tested for its solidarity. So on that score, Germany is really getting ready for the numbers to start going up. We've seen Italy today, a record number of people have died in the last 24 hours. That 475 died. Now, that's the highest recorded number in a single day in any country. So that is concerning. In the area Lombardy, in the north, worst hit Italian area, the Lombardy president says that the numbers of infections are not reducing, still too high. And they're actually going to start thinking about perhaps they need to bring in more restrictions on the movement of people. Again, you look across at Spain, there's concern there that they're going to have to extend the 15-day lockdown because numbers still seem to be on the rise. Two areas where there has been a lot of conflict has been on the Austria-Hungary border. That border was closed, and that's a very important area for people wanting to get home. Romanians, Bulgarians need to go through that border. So that was closed. We've also got a situation on the German-Polish border. That border has been closed, and there's a backlog of people who are from the Baltic states who need to transit through Poland to get back home. The Poles are saying they're not going to open that border. So for the time being, you're seeing those two choke points of countries that are absolutely terrified of even letting people transit through their country to be able to get home.
And I hear the situation in Lombardy, Italy is just getting really, really concerning.
It is really concerning. And the difficulty with Lombardy is they're already on a very, very serious lockdown. People cannot go out. So what more can they do? We've seen a lot of surgical masks and supplies being flown into the European Union, particularly from China. China has been shipping them to Italy. They've been shipping them into France. So the supplies are coming in. The testing kits are coming in. But really, the numbers do keep going up in Lombardy, and it's just really everyone's at a loss as to think what more they can do. In Lombardy, when you think about it, that includes Milan, one of the wealthiest areas in Italy. It just doesn't seem to have the tools to be able to get on top of this virus.
Three major U.S. media outlets have been expelled from China, while others, including Voice of America, are being told they need to provide detailed information about why they are there. It comes at a time when the world is dealing with a global crisis that really needs open communication about the spread of the coronavirus. Joining us to talk about it is Patricia Gallagher Newberry, president of the Society of Professional Journalists. This really seems like an especially dangerous time to be shuttering information.
disturbing news that China is making this decision at this really critical time to expel the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal from China in the midst of this global pandemic is irresponsible, it's unsettling, and it's very detrimental to all of our knowledge about what's happening with coronavirus. So obviously, these are major news organizations here in the West. They are high-producing, high-level news organizations that are covering this story at a very comprehensive level. They're throwing all resources on this story. And so to be asked to exit the country at this really critical time is really detrimental to all of our knowledge on what's going on at the epicenter of the pandemic.
Why do you think they would do something like this at this critical moment?
Well, of course, what we're reading is that it's a retaliatory move, that we've had a trade war with China for a number of months now. And then earlier this month, in early March, the Trump administration sought to expel some Chinese journalists from the United States. I believe it was up to 100 journalists who would be expelled from the United States, journalists affiliated with state-run Chinese media organizations. And so this seems to be, we can only use our conjecture here, but it seems to be a retaliatory move on the part of China in reaction to the Trump administration's move.
Right. Well, this just seems to be coming at a time when the world is just dealing with such an incredibly massive crisis, worldwide crisis, that impacts everyone on the planet. Very worrisome.
Very worrisome. And of course, we can only guess, but it seems as though China would just not like Western news organizations to be poking around on this story, right? Because this is, of course, the genesis of the coronavirus epidemic. It started in Wuhan, and we have Western news organizations trying to get to the bottom of it, trying to understand why it first emanated from this part of China, what Chinese officials did or did not do in reaction, did or did not do in sufficient amount of time to contain the virus. And so we can only guess that these are angles of this continuing news story that Chinese officials would just not like out there in the news ecosystem.
And apparently they have also told Time Magazine and Voice of America that they want to have more information about what they're covering.
Absolutely. So what we're hearing is that the Chinese government is asking for information about the personnel of the three organizations already mentioned, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, additionally, Voice of America and Time Magazine. They want to know personnel and they want to know asset levels, I guess, investment levels in China of those five Western-based news organizations. I'm not sure what the motivation of that would be. Why would they want that additional information? And is it all in service to maybe also seeking to boot out Voice of America and Time? I don't know. It's a very curious move, and it could not come at a worse time. We need to know how this all happened so that we can effectively, as a people, as a culture, as society, push back, fight back, and ultimately find solutions to ending the growth of coronavirus.
That's Patricia Gallagher Newberry, president of the Society of Professional Journalists. Thank you for being with us. Former Vice President Joe Biden now appears to be on a glide path to the Democratic Party's presidential nomination after convincing victories in three state primaries Tuesday in Arizona, Florida, and Illinois. Biden has been on a massive winning streak in recent weeks over his remaining rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. The Sanders campaign says the senator will now reassess his campaign in conversations with supporters. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden solidified his grip on the party's nomination Tuesday and also sought to reassure U.S. voters on the threat posed by the coronavirus.
We're all in this together. This is a moment for each of us to see and believe the best in every one of us, to look out for our neighbor, to understand the fear and stress that so many are feeling.
Senator Bernie Sanders also focused on the coronavirus pandemic, but said little about Tuesday's primary results, where Sanders lost in all three states up for grabs.
We need to make certain that everybody in our country who needs to go to a doctor can get the health care they need regardless of their income.
Biden coasted to victories in Arizona, Florida, and Illinois Tuesday in a primary race that is now overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic. Illinois voter Dave Klawan supported Sanders.
So I'll go vote, and then I'll vigorously wash my hands afterward.
Biden turned his campaign around with a victory in the South Carolina primary less than 3 weeks ago, and he has never looked back, says analyst Jim Kessler.
And when Sanders became a serious candidate and people really said, okay, is it going to be him? They said, no, let's coalesce behind somebody. And that was Joe.
Democrats must now focus on uniting the party if they hope to defeat Donald Trump in the November election, says Professor Larry Sabatai.
Bernie has to find ways to calm down the more extreme Bernie bots, as they're called, Bernie bros, Bernie bots. And the Biden supporters and the mainstream establishment Democrats have got to reach out to the Sanders people and have serious conversations with them.
Several upcoming primaries have already been postponed due to the coronavirus threat. Some states are also looking to move to mail-in balloting. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Dear world, how is the lockdown? Signed, Gaza. That was a not-so-subtle dig on social media to the international community from someone in Gaza. It's just one among a torrent of social media posts emerging from the blockaded Gaza Strip in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. The sight of a world locking itself down seems to have unleashed a wellspring of emotions in Gaza, the tiny coastal enclave that has for years lived with enforced isolation and confinement. Along 90% of its land and sea boundaries, its access to the outside world is controlled by Israel and by Egypt on its narrow southern border. The irony is not lost on Gazans that the restrictions may have also contributed to slowing the entry of the coronavirus, with no cases reported thus far in Gaza. U.S. immigration courts are either closed or drastically curtailing operations in the latest of a series of moves by the Trump administration affecting immigrants to the U.S. during the crisis. After repeated requests from the Immigration Judges Union, the Justice Department Wednesday ordered 10 immigration courts shuttered until April 10th, bringing the total shutdown to 11 of the 58 courts nationwide. An Apollo 15 astronaut, Al Warden, who circled the moon alone while his two crewmates drove around in the first lunar rover, has died at the age of 88. Family and friends say he died in his sleep at a Houston, Texas rehab center Wednesday after treatment for an infection. Warden flew to the moon in 1971 along with David Scott and Jim Irwin. That was his only space flight. He was NASA's fifth astronaut class, chosen in 1966. Scott is one of four moonwalkers still alive. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic and more. A year after eastern Zimbabwe was hit by Cyclone Idai, one of the worst tropical storms for Africa on record, some survivors are still recovering. The cyclone killed hundreds of people in Zimbabwe and left thousands homeless. Authorities have been rebuilding, but many are still living in temporary housing, as Columbus Mofunga from the border with Mozambique. You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues.
I'm Amanda Bennett, and I'm Director of Voice of America. I'm recording this from home because here at Voice of America, almost all of us are now working remotely in order to help slow the spread of the coronavirus that I know has been affecting so many of you and your families. I just wanted to let you know that while the health and safety of our employees is really our primary concern, we also are aware that during this troubling time, you are increasingly turning to us for the factual, unbiased information that you need to make decisions about your lives. So we are working as hard as we can to keep up as much of our programming as we can during this time. You may notice some changes in the shows that you've been used to watching, and some of them may have to go off the air. If that happens, we will keep you informed as to where you can find the content that you're used to seeing. So I'd like to wish you all good luck and good health, and thank you very much. We'll hopefully be here for you. Thank you.
In Virunga National Park in Rwanda, officials are temporarily closing mountain gorilla tourism as a precautionary measure. Scientific experts say primates, including endangered mountain gorillas, are likely susceptible to complications arising from the virus. Park officials say they must do everything they can to protect the endangered species. Meanwhile, a Washington State sanctuary for chimpanzees, once used for scientific research, is also taking measures to safeguard its resident primates. Diana Goodrich, who co-founded the sanctuary, says their whole population could be vulnerable.
We have to, in some ways, assume that we're carrying it, especially because we know that you can be completely asymptomatic but still be carrying it. So we just want to put a barrier between our germs and the chimps as much as we can. So we're all wearing gloves that we're changing frequently, and we're wearing masks to protect them from us.
As reports of coronavirus cases in Washington began piling up at the beginning of March, Goodrich started to drastically reduce the number of staff members entering the sanctuary.
We just are going along as usual, and the chimps are just doing their thing. So our day-to-day doesn't change that much, except that we're wearing scrubs and masks and gloves, and we're not letting the chimps touch our skin at all. And we just have a really drastically reduced number of people here.
Now just a few workers come in each day to help feed and clean, wearing medical scrubs, masks, and gloves to reduce chances of exposure. School closures caused by the coronavirus pandemic means many parents are trying to come up with some sort of way to educate and entertain their children at home. While there are many online options, some parents worry about too much screen time. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details on a couple of applications that combine the physical and digital so students learning at home get the best of both worlds.
For parents who are worried about too much screen time when their children are home, they're not alone.
If you're wasting your time on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, that's the bad kind of screen time that we want to eliminate.
Technology is great. It's all around us, and there's so many fantastic things out there, but a lot of the way maybe kids use it is passive.
Instead of playing video games and consuming other people's ideas, software engineer Martin Horseman created a way for children to express their own ideas by combining real-world skills with technology. It's an app called Doodlematic, first design and draw a game using specific colors. A different color tells the program whether something is an avatar, a goal, or a hazard. Take a picture of it from a mobile device through the app, and it becomes a video game. Horstman says making video games can teach important life skills.
We believe strongly that creativity and imagination is such an important skill for every career path that you might end up taking.
Kids can design two animated games for free, then pay just under $30 to create 1,000 more animated games. Another app called Vivid Books uses augmented reality to bring these pages to life. On difficult physics concepts, says Vivid Books co-founder David Drobic.
If you look at any traditional textbook that kids use today or that they used to use over the last 40 years, you see some small diagrams and plenty of text around them. Physics has a lot of caveats and a lot of concepts that are very visual in the sense that if you apply a digital layer with an animation that explains different concepts, it's much easier to explain rather than having to read a lot of text.
Through a desktop or mobile device, Vivid Books pages can be printed out. With the app, this is what you'll see when a mobile device is held over the page.
The device recognizes the image on the worksheet, and that's how it knows that it should play a certain type of animation.
The app is currently only available for Apple mobile devices. Web and Android versions are expected in June. During the pandemic, parents can access textbook pages for free. The target age, 10 to 12 years old. The company plans to add chemistry and biology content and expand material for more ages. These apps try to combine the best of the real and digital worlds to help children stay mentally active and engaged while they're away from school. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
American singer-songwriter Justin Trawick, who normally plays up to 18 live shows a month and now zero due to concert venues shutting down due to the coronavirus, is now coming up with an alternative to entertaining his fans online. It started as a way to pay the bills, but evolved into something more. Reuters producer Jillian Kitchener files this report.
What we are doing right now, hold on, Lauren, let me see the people real quick. Okay. Listen to me. It's just you and me.
Singer-songwriter Justin Trawick is staying close to his fans while practicing social distancing by streaming his performances live on Facebook. It's all he can do as the spreading coronavirus in the United States put his dozen or so live shows a month on ice.
As a musician, 100% of my income comes from not only being a musician and playing guitar, but playing guitar live in front of people. For our shows to be canceled, it begins to dig very deep, slowly but surely, into the amount of money that I make to pay for things like not only the rent here in my apartment where, you know, I'm talking, but also health insurance, car insurance, gas in my car, food.
As a means of financial survival, the lead singer of Justin Trawick and The Common Good, along with his girlfriend, live streams performances from his home in Arlington, Virginia. Using only an iPhone, the 38-year-old films and collects digital donations.
Those are the two ways that if you feel like tipping us, you can. And if you don't feel like it, no problem.
In just two sessions, Trawick raked in enough money to cover the losses from five canceled shows. But these socially distant performances, according to Trawick, are now about more than just money.
You know, I think that we're bringing something to people that is creating a little bit of levity in their lives where they might all be a little stressed otherwise. You know, we're going to the grocery store and people are... We're fighting over, you know, the last ream of toilet paper. People are a little bit more worked up than they are normally in life.
In real life, during a show, the cheers would be deafening if they came from a crowd of 3,000. Whereas now, he says, the comments scrolling down the screen are the new kind of applause.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A University of Geneva-led study provides evidence that it rains droplets of iron during the evening on the exoplanet WASP-76b. Study authors described the planet as an ultra-hot super Jupiter located 390 light-years away and that it's tidally locked with its star. This means that the planet has a permanent day and night side. The day side temperature is said to be over 2,400 degrees Celsius, hot enough to vaporize metals like iron into the atmosphere. Nightside temperatures dropped to 1,500 degrees Celsius. The study authors found that strong winds are generated due to the temperature difference between the two sides of the planet. These winds carry the vaporized iron from the ultra-hot day side to the cooler night side, forming iron droplets that then fall like rain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for listening. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jackson Mubunganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care and be well.
This is VOA News.